the wand, a puff of smoke, and the magic man pulls one out of the hat.
I still can't believe it happened.
Welcome to the Mirror's Magic Supercoach podcast, the Q&A, the big finale for the season guide for supercoaches. I'm still your host with us, who's been with us all pre-season, Tommy. How are you, Tommy?
Yeah, not too bad, mate. Bit frazzled, to be honest. Like, coming into the season, usually I'm pretty confident with where my team and my structures are at. I think we were just talking before, I've got four teams that I'd be happy to run them all, and I just don't know which one to pick at the moment. So, hopefully we can chat through these questions and the answers might present themselves to me, but I'm struggling a little bit.
Yeah, I said maybe auntie or uncle could win the 50K this year, and that's the case. I've probably got two teams I'm tossing between, but yeah, we'll get into those and a few of the listener questions come through. I think we've got 19 questions. We'll punch through those, and then I dare say I've got a few more than that to ask you. But yeah, it's funny this time of year. I think you were super confident this time last year, and maybe the uncertainty is a good thing. Who knows? But we'll see which way we lean. First question's about this ruck position, which I think we've all got questions about at the moment. Yeah, obviously Marshall's locked, and I've currently in this iteration going to a Darcy as my R2 with thoughts of potentially doing an English, but I just don't like that round one matchup. And then potentially doing a Darcy Cameron should Cox not get named, which would surprise me given Cox was there throughout the intra club, the two practice matches. But Cameron's been having this limited pre-season. Maybe they were just getting him ripe, ready to go for round one. But the question's Tim English. So does he have enough upside at 581K to take on the injury risk? He's missed 10 home and away games the last two seasons, soft tissue, concussion. Injuries have been early in the season. Understand he has the upside to be potentially the best ruck, but he feels as if it's going to be a guaranteed trade at one point. Where do you sit on English at the moment?
He's not in my side, but And for me, I think he's probably the third best option. And being the third best option makes you a good pick. Like, he could certainly outperform a Sean Darcy. Darcy comes with similar injury risk. Even Rowan Marshall comes with a pretty checkered history. Like, he's had foot problems over his whole career. So the ruck line is probably the hardest to be set on because there's so many question marks there. I think Darcy Cameron comes with a fair bit of durability. And like you said, if Cox wasn't named, that'd be a godsend. I think English was probably what the highest owned ruck or the second highest owned ruck to Rowan Marshall through most of the preseason. And that's for a reason because the age profile's right. He did it for a significant chunk of the season last year in the first half before the injuries caught up with him. So in my opinion, like he's a good pick. I wouldn't talk anyone out of starting him. There's less sharing risk, but it's the injury concern. And I suppose, you know, that sits with the other ruckman. So, he could certainly outperform that price. And he's a decent starting pick, but I've got question marks on it. And if he lit the preseason matches on fire, I think he'd be a hell of a lot more popular. But I don't think if you're big on him, I don't think you'd put too much weight into those preseason games.
Yeah, so to limit that risk of injury, concussion, you could play the Asava Radigalia. And there's a question here, could he be R2? Personally, I think no, because I don't think he's going to have the scoring power nor the certainty in selection each week. I know they've got a few injuries to start the season, the Cats, but he wasn't in their best 22 last year, and they've gone and recruited probably six. I know Selwood's retired, but they've got about six players who could all walk in there. So for me, that's too much of a risk at R2. But by having, whether it's at F6, F7 or R3, you've then got that backup for that injury risk of English. And so when my team was structured up with English there, that's where I felt a bit of safety knowing I had Radigalia there. And as it happens to be, I've still got Rats there at F7 as we speak and Darcy. So that could limit the risk. But I've actually now got Darcy outscoring him this season and at a cheaper price tag. So that's why I've simped opted for Darcy. It's annoying that we didn't get the nice look at how the Darcy-Jackson combo was going to go rucking together. Because in the preseason, what, Darcy put up a 127 on low game time, but 88% CBAs, he won't be getting that with Jackson in there with him. It was 75% in the practice match, which wasn't, stats weren't taken. So I think that's going to be more the mix, which is obviously a lot more attractive than a Gawn 60-40, 55-45, 50-50. And I'm confident enough that if Darcy at 75%, which is about where he's been the last 3 years, but he's also had a bit of interrupted preseason, we'll see some nice scoring from him. A couple of questions about the buys. I remember we covered this last year because I personally don't look at the buys when building my round one structure. I pick the best players available and start looking at them sooner about. But people talk about this round 15 buy in particular being the tricky one with Port, GWS, Dogs and Tigers all on that buy. And I know myself, I'm very heavy Dogs and Giants, which might make it tricky. But I think, well, my answer to that is that if there's ever to be a tough buy round, it's that last one, which is round 15, when you've already done, you've got so many trades leading up to that with the boost plus three trades per week for the four buy rounds. And then you're looking at those extra, you got 3 weeks to scramble with those trades to hopefully get yourself up to 18 come round 15. So I wouldn't take it into account. I'd still be picking best available. You the same?
Yeah, 100%. That's the perfect buy to be stacked on. And there's enough rookies. I'm just looking at now, Toby McLean, Oscar Baker, Will Phillips, Hopper, Liam Jones, Cowan. They're just the ones in my team before they're named that you just got to sort of move those players on to players that are going to be playing that buy, and that's going to work itself out. We have the extra trades. You get up to four if you've got some boosts in the pocket through the buy rounds to fix that structure. So I wouldn't be too concerned. If you're big on a player, don't let the buy turn you off. But if you're head-to-head, you really can't split two players for whatever reason, your buy might be able to dictate that and make the decision for you. That would be the only time I'd consider it.
Yeah, and when the in-season kicks off, which this is obviously part of the end of the season guide here, that's got a buy round plan, which certainly helps you see how that's looking and how it's structuring as it goes on. A question about high-priced rookies on the bench. So is someone like a Cam McKenzie at 180K, is that too much money to spend sitting on your bench?
It's not too much. I was listening to the pod you did with Jeppa on my way home this afternoon, and it made me a little bit nervous, actually, in terms of what sort of rookie outlook. Like, I think we're going to get enough for round one, but I guess that rookie outlook throughout the season, they always do come, but securing the ones that are playing early on. And if your structure, I guess, the team that you're happy with has McKenzie on the bench, I think that's okay. I would probably try and get him on field and then try and use, I suppose, if you've got a premium or mid-price and pushing him to the bench, try and get that onto a different line. But if you're happy with your side and he's on the pine, I think that's more than okay.
Yeah, and that one with Jeb, it's very much more in the fantasy game where you've got those extra trades and you haven't got as many gimme picks, like a Constable's basement price rookie essentially in this game where it's 300K in fantasy. So you typically have, it's a bit, you need to be safer with those rookies. For me, I've got McKenzie currently on field, but I don't hate the idea of getting him to M9 because he will be a very popular on-field rookie for a lot. And if he were to do what we saw Josh Ward do last year and underperform, it could be a leg up on the comp. But that's just a simple thing saying there's one early draftee hawk with another. They did well in the preseason, not going to go well in the real thing. Like McKenzie was unbelievable in that practice match. And if he comes out and bees that rookie we want him to be, which we saw he can do it in underage. And what did he score in the practice match here, 99 from lowish game time. I'm pretty comfortable having him on my field as it stands. But I've got players, I said, Radical is on my bench for similar price, 174K. But with him, I do get that flexibility for a backup ruck, knowing my R3 is a non-player. What's our structure looking like? I'll go first. I've gone pretty light on, and I have mentioned this all pre-season in the back line. I have paid up for one of the big defenders. I then go Yo at D2, so it jumps right down to then if he's a mid-price, and if you call Liam Jones a mid-price, he's there too, and someone else around that price point of 210. Then the rookies, Jimmy Constable and the couple of rookies in the back line, midfield as it stands, I've gone three main premiums who I think can be captain options. Then it's the breakout of Tom Green at M4, two mid prices, Hopper and Callaghan. But at the moment, I'm wanting to get Callaghan up to ideally a Setterfield or a Sheed instead. But I've just got to find that cash. It might be a Radiglia off the bench after saying I've got that money on the bench. And then the two rookies, Rucks, two premiums. And then I'm one of the, I think it's few at the moment, but going with the five deep primo forward. I know initially we were on board probably earlier than most, pretty keen on having four of them. And that seemed a bit of a stretch when most were like, oh, four's too many to start. I've now gone five. So who knows how that's going to end up spitting out. But that's where I currently sit. Tommy, how are you looking?
Yeah, look, I've got two structures that are going to be dictated by the rookies. The one that I'm staring at now, yeah, really thin in defence. I've just gone the one Uber Primo, then down to Yo in the midfield running. Four really, I guess, very confident premiums. And then I move down to Tom Green and then to Hopper, the two Primo Ruckman. And then I've got four, well, I guess three, I guess, are the real popular 500 plus players in the in the forward line. Then I've got Goulden, who's obviously really popular, and then a mid-pricer in Bruin. So not too dissimilar to yours. And I think depending on the rookies that we get in defence, we'll sort of dictate whether I go one down back and five in the midfield or two down back and four in the midfield.
Yeah, I think the difference with our structure is you've got a Bruin instead. I've got another one of those big primo forwards, which allows you to then get, rather than say the Callaghan I've got, you can get another Uber premium, which just almost thinking out loud, that seems pretty attractive. So by no means I'm set on mine, but that's where I am currently standing. I just need to get some more confidence in this mid-price forward to have at F5, because I don't love Bruin, Flanders, Malira, whoever else is there long. So it could be something where I'll run this structure to start, and if one of those do pop, that's what those early trades are for, what I use them for. Seeing Bruin in real life two rounds and the fact that price movements don't change in this format, I might be able to take down one of those Uber premium forwards down to them and then do the upgrade on the failed mid-price, or even do a failed mid-price with the midfield and fling up one of those forwards in the midfield and then get whichever one of those mid-price forward options pop. But as I said, I'm yet to be really confident in any of them, despite Bruin's appears to be a great role and scoring ability. The fact, and it's always good to see those who score so much more in Supercoach they did in fantasy, and that's what Bruin did in the practice match. How are you navigating the higher-priced rookies in Callaghan, Jones, McLean? At the moment, I've gone McLean out, despite him looking like the gimme pick of the season to start the pre-season. I think he's looks to not be an inside mid and get that opportunity to tackle. He's even playing on a wing high forward and not only look the same or play the same, but look the same. There's a lot of dogs who do that similar role, which you can see him potentially being a sub one day or dropped or whatever it is. And again, maybe after two games, if he does put up 85, 90, I can do that same sort of switch with my team, but I'm not confident enough to start the season with him. Whereas at the moment, Jones and Callaghan are in. Jones, I'm pretty confident with him because we've seen him do it before. Callaghan, we haven't seen him do it before. My concerns with him, the fact I'm going so heavy with the Giants, I'm a bit concerned about how much ball can be won, particularly if they're not going to be as strong. I don't like outside wingmen in my midfield, and he appears to, one day he's going to be a superstar inside mid, but he appears to be starting his career as a wingman. So slight concerns on him, but as it currently stands, I've got two of those three in my side.
Yeah. They're all good picks. I guess when you sort of look at even like the rookie price players, so you sort of look at a Sheasel or even a McKenzie, I guess where you're targeting these players, they've got the more mature bodies. They've had the extra preseason in Callaghan's case, heaps more in Jones and McLean's case. So I guess they're really good picks. I guess the only thing I would caution people against is sort of picking all the mid prices, because they're all not going to work out. You know, if you've got five, I think that's going to be really risky. And that kind of even includes a McLean and those expensive rookies, because there's not a whole lot of room to move if they don't work out, if you've got them all. But if you sort of pick, you know, two, three, you can be confident that there's either going to be a rookie there or a mid-pricer underneath that you could move off to. I think that, yeah, they're all worth picking. Callahan, like, it's a second-year breakout playing on a wing, history of foot injuries. It's probably what scared me off. I know he played really good and he passed the eye test in the preseason game, but his score was boosted by those couple of goals as well. So for me, he's not someone I've been massive on, but like I said earlier, I've got a Bruin sitting there who I'm a bit iffy on. If Callahan pops or if Flanders pops, it's quite an easy move.
Yeah, so Callahan's going to be a star. I think we've seen enough that that's going to be, and we might look back being like, oh, we had the chance, of, like we did with Oliver that year, pick up a Callahan at 244K and got that breakout. But as you said, the foot issue, he's yet to play a full game, so that practice match, intra-club, he only played half a game. The game just gone, he played very low game time, so he's still building and building. Obviously, he's cheap, which is the attractive price point, but yeah, I'm going to do what I can to potentially get him to... I'd love a Will Setterfield in that team, is what I'm trying to do. And then with Setterfield, you mentioned last week, the beauty of him is he's the most expensive of all the mid-prices, that he's easy to come down to. Whereas if Callahan struggles the first two, I'm a bit stuck in no man's land. I'm going to have to do a bit of a double trade or restructure. Speaking of another mid-price we haven't spoken about, which is Warple, this person's got all three of Sheed, Hopper and Warple. Can you see them all averaging 90? Can you start all three? And if one had to go, who would it be?
You can start all three. I personally wouldn't. I suppose if I was going to rank them, I'd go Hopper. Even though he didn't look great in the preseason, he's got the history, he's got the body, he's got the role. He doesn't have the big deficiency of who I'd probably have next in Warple. Warple's shown that he can do the scoring, he can find the footy like no tomorrow. The only big question mark on him is his ball use, one that's going to, you know, lead to some impacted scores, and it might impact his role if Sam Mitchell has enough of him just butchering the footy in the middle. And then below that, I'd have Sheed. I just think he hasn't demonstrated enough over his career. There's similar concerns in terms of, I guess, injury risk, and I just don't think he has the ceiling. Where if Warple gets a good run, I think he can easily average over 90, and Hopper's done it four times before, where I think with Sheed, he's probably got the more question marks for me, even though he's probably a little bit safer in the side than Warple. But Warple should play, so.
Yeah, no, you're right, and Xavier made a couple of points today about Warple, because my view is if Mitchell's got an eye for the future, why would he continue to give Warple more time over a Ward, who I was pretty bullish on but didn't get much time inside on the practice match, sacrificing for Warple. But his point was a couple of things. One, it's nice to have that bigger body, more mature in there, who does bash and crash a bit and protects the young McKenzie and Ward. And also, a midfielder, while they're not trying to win games at the moment and probably an eye for the future, might not be the worst thing having someone in there who's turning it over for them. But in terms of over 90, I've currently, in terms of my projections, I've got Hopper low 90, so 92 I've got him at, which potentially could go down, worst case, 85, which if he scored 85, he's not going to make the 150K, but I don't think it's going to be a failed pick if he sits there and just gets you some nice 85 scores. Dom Sheed, I've got a little bit lower, as you mentioned. He looked a little bit rusty. Didn't love the way it looked, but I've got him going probably, 87 is what I've currently got him at. Could be lower than that. I think best case he might get up to 90. His best ever season was 93 when he was looking the goods, and he just looked short of a run. The game just gone. And who was the third player with? Was it
Warple?
The Warple we had. So I've got. Oh yeah, James Warple. James Warple. What have I got Warps to do? I think it's less than Sheed, but you're right. The price point makes it a bit. So if I got Warple going 83, so I actually don't have him going over 90. So it makes it. Yeah, if the, if they all pop, you're going to look like a hero. As I said, last year I had Rao and Bomber, Caldwell, and I had Berry, and I think you could happily say none of them really did what I top end of my expectations, but they all served a role. They all made some cash. They all made me at least feel a bit more confident being on field, being a mature body, scoring in those 70s, 80s, 90s at times, while the some other rookies were failing, which is why I think you probably can have all three. But yeah, at the moment I've only got the one, and I'm normally the mid-price man. Are you starting either Fife or Oliver? At the moment I'm starting neither. Tommy?
Yeah, neither for me. Oliver's price is just so big, him and Laird, that, you know, even back-to-back 115s is going to see a fairly substantial price drop where, I guess just the way that I'm structuring up my side, I'm looking for those players that are going to, you know, be that 40 to 50K underprice on what I hope they can achieve. So for me, no, but I also, if I had Laird or an Oliver, like those massive price players, I'd be a hell of a lot more confident in my captain's choice week in, week out, which is certainly worth paying up for. And with Fife, he's not someone I've considered, and that's purely based on injury risk, really. I think it's a big concern. They've got a really easy run, Freo, and, you know, even though like what he needs to average might be out of reach on a week per week basis, he could easily put up a 130 on a big goal scoring game and really spike that cash gen. So really not a bad pick at all. Not someone I'd ever talk anyone out of, but for me, it's just a no, just based on that injury risk.
Yeah, I'm with you. So Oliver, I've got him being the second highest scorer this year and Laird number one, not hard because they were 1 or 2 last year, but the way I play fantasy is I try to pick those who are cheaper who could potentially score in line, and at the moment I'm hoping that's going to be Bontempelli this year. So he's currently my M1, bit cheaper, and I think he's got the potential to do the same. And now I'm not starting Fife either, despite that easy draw to start. I think with my 5 deep, he might be that man I was saying where I'm looking for someone to be that F5 if it's not going to start those 5 gun forwards. But at the moment, I've got more confidence in those 5 forwards. Is it a bad idea to have $100,000 sitting in the bank after round one for fix-up trades?
$100,000, I think it maybe because it's got the extra zeros, is not something that I would do. I think having, you know, 40, 50K there is something that I would definitely, be happy to go in the year with if I couldn't find anywhere to use it. I just think with 100, you should be able to use 100 to increase your on-field scoring pretty substantially. So, you know, if that's, if you can't find anywhere to use it, is it using that extra money to put Radigalia at R3 just so you've got that ruck coverage if you're playing an English Marshall or Darcy combo. If I've got 70K there, I'm certainly putting him, even if it's on the bench, just as coverage, because one, he's going to give you cash gen, and two, he's going to give you cover. So for me, I think it's a little bit too much around that 30 to 50 mark. I reckon you could justify it, especially if you'd earmarked, like, you know, you're sitting there with a Warple and you're a little bit iffy about it, but you're not set on Setterfield, but you'd like to have the cash there to go there. Yeah, maybe, but I think 100's too much.
Yeah, I'm with you. And yeah, obviously the money, given the money to spend on the salary cap to get your points. So you're essentially sacrificing points on the field for potentially fix-up trades. I'd rather use it now and get those early points. It's a balance between hunting value, but then also spending that cash you have. And in my past teams, like, I'd typically spend all the cash I've got. So I'm going to stick to that.
For sure, if you can. I've got 44 and I'm trying to find a way to downgrade a player to try and get up a rookie on my bench. So, yeah, if you can spend it, I would.
Fife and Flanders or Goulden and Philippou? For me, it's more the gun and the rook, because I think it will save your trade in the long run, because Goulden, I think, can be a keeper for the season.
Yeah, I think that's fairly straightforward. I think Goulden presents a heap of value, and at that price, people are picking him to be a keeper. He's also really highly owned at the moment, so safety in numbers. If he doesn't work out, I'm not sure where you would try and find that cash to get up to him if he's popped off 2 120s back to back.
I don't like talking power of hunches because sometimes, and I've had it a couple of times in the past with where it was a Wingard and they come off. So this coach last year had a hunch on Dylan Moore in AFL Fantasy who had a big breakout. His hunch this season doesn't get me as excited. It's Brandon Cox in Supercoach, passes the eye test, different to usual tool defender, takes marks, runs off, intercepts. I couldn't do it. I don't really love... I'm struggling having my mate Liam Jones in my team despite his cheap price tag. I just don't like having key defenders in my fantasy or super coach team. So for me, it's no, but yeah, back in your hunch if you do feel that way. Fifey, we've spoken about. Radigalia, good backup. We've also spoken about that, and I think it is good backup. But as I said, I'm trying to find some cash. I've almost just penciled in Radigalia F7 for me for that backup. But if I'm looking for cash and knowing that Fergus Green's probably going to be there for the first at least 8-9 weeks, that extra cash could get me a Callaghan up to whether it's a Sheed or if I can do my best, even a Setterfield. So maybe I won't be paying up. But in my opinion, as it currently stands, I've got Radigalia there. I think it's as safe as a backup. For this coach, 3 Primo in the midfield, which includes Green, which means I've only got 2 primos. That's actually one less than I'm currently running. How are you viewing Oliver Laird type as your M1 so you've got a safety as a captain rather than a cheaper one? Let's talk about this loophole. So the backup of that 2 cracks at the loophole is a big help. Are you currently going in with 29 green dots into round one?
Yeah, I do. If there was a basement ruck 124 or under that I had confidence in their job security, I'd put them there and I'd run 30 green dots. But because there's not, I guess it's only Rat. I would personally probably, if I'm going to play Rat, I'm probably going to play him at F6 or F7 and then have a Matt in there that I can swing in back and forth if needed. I just think 170 is probably too much to not get any exposure to your field. He provides good cover as that swing man. But then, like, the loophole is very valuable. If you're on a, I don't know who plays early, I know, like a Dunkley on Saturday afternoon, and he only pops off with a 90 or so. You've got like a Madden or someone from GWS that you can do the swing and then go to a Laird or someone that can give you that bonus. Or if Dunk goes huge and then, you know, Laird's looking at the tag and he puts in a stinker, you've got to jump on the people that have run 30 dots. So I think it's really year dependent. In other years, we've had that ruck option. This year, we don't. So I would probably look for the loophole this year.
Yeah, I'm with you. And naturally, we say it, and you end up getting it in 2 weeks' time. You'll find you'll have that loophole. So if you don't do it, you're not lost. But last year, I started with an Elijah Hollins for the loophole and still generated enough cash to the point when before he debuted, I still had enough cash to have that complete team. So I don't think you need all those benches, rookie spots generating the cash, so you can afford to have one, and you can't put a price on that backup loophole option for the captain. So yeah, as it stands, I've got Madden there. Toying with that St Kilda ruckman, Max Heath, because there's a chance he might debut early, so, and by then I might have another red dot. So you're a bit like what I did with Elijah Hollins, that, yep, you're getting the red dot, but eventually they play. But, yeah, the 102 plays plenty of Sunday games. There's a reason why Madden's a popular start. Thoughts on starting 11 versus 12 keepers? So I think the old school mentality was 13, even 14 keepers when the trades were at 30. Now we're at 36 this year, assuming you're going to use 10 trades for fix-up trades, injuries, whatever it is. You got 26 for upgrading, means you can do 13 upgrades if it's one down, one up. Probably a bit less if you're boosting and getting it a bit earlier, but you should be able to do 11, 12 upgrades, which means If you're starting with 11 keepers, I think that's fine. Looking at my team, I've got one in defence, hoping Yo becomes a keeper. 1, 2, 3, 4 in the midfield. So that's 5, 6, 7 rucks, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. So I've got the 12, but I wouldn't be too concerned about running the 11. How many keepers in your mind have you got, Tommy?
I've got 12. And then in saying that, I guess one of them is Green. You're sort of tipping on a breakout. And then you've got Goulden, who's really highly owned, that's also undervalued. Like, we typically, most years, you sort of don't get presented with that many of these types of options, which obviously means you're saving cash. I think if we were looking at similar sort of prices to last year, I think 11 would probably be the go. And certainly you could run 11 this year. I've toyed around with 11. And then obviously that means that you've got to use that cash on mid prices. And then for my team, we were discussing it earlier, like I had 200K in the bank. It was my team last week. I had 11 with a whole bunch of mid price, and I kept coming back to my team with 200K there, not knowing how to use it. So I've just ended up removing one of the mid prices and turning the other one into a primo. So 11's perfectly fine if that's the structure you want to run.
Yep. Final question, philosophy at trading before round 6 and before it's time to start doing the upgrade. So we, in terms of the in-season, when we start going through, we've got the trade insights, look at trades of the past from Tommy's 2 years of top 10, my year last year, what trades we made, what we feel and what trades we're looking to do. What worked last year doesn't... I've got 1 year of data with these boosts. I'm not sure if it's going to work every year, but it was to use them early. So I used a boost in round 3 to make sure I had as many of the best rookies as possible and those mid prices, because before their price popped. So I used 3 then, and then I used those boosts, yeah, around that round 6 mark, I think it would have been even 5, potentially 5, 6, 7, to get that early upgrade and get the rookies off the field and start getting more premiums than the average side to get those points early. So I'm big on trading early, but I'm also the man who I run out of trades with about 2 or 3 rounds to go. So still trying to look for that balance.
Yeah, agree. I think almost certainly you're going to be using 3 in at the end of round 2. And that's if you don't, you've absolutely nailed your starting team. But that's what they're there for. That's what they're there to use. Make sure you've got the right rookies and the right cash-generating mid-prices. And then, yeah, I think that aggressiveness with those boosts is going to hold true. I just think one thing to be cautious of is not upgrading for the sake of upgrading, getting out of players that haven't fully matured. And if you're not, you know, jumping on a premium that's come down in price and it's absolutely right. So you still got to be using them wisely. I think last year I got caught into a little bit of looking at people around the caper, making those upgrades, and I probably traded out of some players that were a little bit too early, and I didn't generate the cash that others that held could have, just because I was trying to keep pace. So it's fine to be a week behind, I think. So, yeah.
Good, mate. What else have I got for you? That's all the main questions. I'm just looking at my own team now. It's more about, it very echoes what the listeners said about money on the bench. Like at the moment, I'm running a Radiglia and a Josh Bruce on the bench in the forward line, and I dare say one of them will go down with Fergus Green, which will then allow me to spend the money elsewhere. And it's probably Bruce, and I've got the Radiglia back up. If Darcy, as we know, prone to soft tissue / concussion, whatever it ends up being, Dockers won't take a risk with him, especially now knowing they've got Jackson there. I think knowing I've got that backup ruck to flick through there, it's probably worth me spending that extra money. But what else have I got for you? Cowan, are you having him on field on Thursday night?
He'll go on field. He's just, as long as like he's not the sub. I'm still not certain on how that's going to work. Is it 4 on the bench and then the sub comes from the emergencies?
Yeah, that's it. Jeppa got it wrong. So that's so we'll know if they're named in the 22, they're not going to be the sub.
Well, that eases my worry a little bit. He'll be on field. I'll chuck the ones that are playing early on field for me.
Campbell Chess is also named, which is good. So we're getting a few of these defender rookies. Jimney's also named. So a few of these rookie defenders are there for us, which is nice.
Love that. I think that's the big part around going that structure in defence, whether it's going to be one primo or two primos, is if those rookies come. I think in terms of the outlook long term for defensive rookies, it's always been really poor. And I think if we can, you know, tuck those away early in the year, start those cash gen coming and, you know, downgrade in the midfield or forward line and upgrade in defence, I think that's the way that I'm thinking it's probably going to work out, because we can't really hope that those rookies are going to come from defence. So you want to stack them up early.
Perfect. Who will be your captain round one?
Undecided. I reckon I'll vice Dunks. Let me have a look at who's playing. I'm tempted by Callie, to be honest. I think it's a if I could VC him, I would. So I probably won't put the captain on him. Yeah, it'll be, where are we? Yeah, I reckon I'll go Dunks into Bont.
Yeah, I might follow suit. Maybe McRae, which I've got in there as well. Concern around having too many players from one team. Do you have that concern?
Nah. Really, we've only ever seen it from the Doggies in the past, where people have stacked up their sides with the Doggies, and you know, where people have started with five in the past and it's worked out fine. So no concerns. There's, you know, 3,300 points in a game to be distributed. If there's players up the top that are absolute stars like the Doggies have got, it just means those, I guess, fringe types down the bottom score less. So, no, not a massive concern for me.
Yeah, and the concern with the Giants is more the fact they've got a new coach. We don't know what style they're going to be. But as you said, the number of points allocated is capped. So unlike AFL Fantasy, where if they play this very low possession game, they're going to get low scores, they'll get scaled to then get up to that margin. So there's a bit of a safety barrier.
Yeah, I think when you're looking at the types of players too, the Doggies, Bont, McRae, especially Bont, prone to some pretty intense scaling. I think if you're picking Josh Kelly, like GWS is obviously the other team that people are sort of getting a lot from, such a great ball user, that the scaling is going to be there for him, so I wouldn't be too concerned.
I think that's all I've got for you, Tommy. Obviously, thanks for what you put into this season guide with your podcast. They've been great. Hope all the listeners have enjoyed it. As mentioned, there'll be the option when you log in, hopefully by tomorrow, to opt into the in-season package, which you could either pay week to week for $2.95 a week or up front for a bit less than $2.50. It ends up being $2.50, that is, per week for the season. And you'll be able to get more podcasts. There'll be a end-of-round wrap. There'll be a quickfire Q&A on the Friday before the season kicks off. There'll be a trade insights, buyer planner, a whole lot more which goes into it. But if not, obviously, thanks so much for your support this season guide. Hope you enjoyed it, and we'll wish you all the best for the season. You too, Tommy.
Cheers, mate. Good luck, everyone.
Thank you. Magic.